Whistler BC in our studio, where if you listen close enough, you can hear the hoots and hollers and the near misses on A-line. I'm your host, Tristan Merrick, and we have a great show lined up for you guys today. We have lots to talk about as the Val d'Isol race was this past weekend, and what a race it was. There were some big winners, and more than a few people hit the deck, so we'll be talking about that shortly. But first, let me introduce today's co-host. His preferred shuttle vehicle is a scooter, and he can do a bigger skid than a 9-year-old boy with back brakes for the first time at Seb Kemp.
Oh, Tristan, cheers, yeah.
Thanks for joining us again here 1 week after Fort William. And, yeah, what a race we had at Val d'Isol. Lots to talk about, lots to break down.
That's been brilliant back-to-back, isn't it?
It's feels like Christmas, and now they're deprived again for another 5 weeks until Andorra. So
we just have to deal with Enduro between now and then.
Yeah, we've got three Enduro events coming up, but that's not exciting stuff anyways. The internet's burned out on that. it's a dead topic.
It had a shelf life of about 3 months.
Yeah, it's now that the season started, it's done and over with. And we're very fortunate enough to be joined by two guests in studio today. They need no introduction. One is the most dominant Canadian female DH racer of all time. Still shows young pups what's up. They keep trying, these little teenagers, and they got nothing for her. And the other one made flat pedals and intense shoes. Yes, there was a flat pedal shoe before the 510, what they are today, and he still holds the largest World Cup win margin. Together they are Kevorak Racing's Chris and Claire. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Tristan.
No worries, guys. You're back in Whistler. You guys have been in town for, a few weeks now? You're continuing your summer-to-summer transition?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. We're here until at least November this year.
Yeah.
And in between that, we're coaching a lot.
Yeah.
Racing.
Busy, busy.
And doing some race clinics. Claire's working on the computer. We've got a hands full, basically.
You guys got your hands full. Cool. Well, we'll definitely touch on you guys, everything here. What we're going to do is we'll dive into some World Cup stuff first, but just want to let all the listeners know that they can stay up to date with the show by following us on Twitter. That's where we post who our guests are each and every week, when the episode will be available on iTunes, and any other information that's going on related to the show. So they can check us out at off_track MTB. And they can also hit us up on email if they have any questions for our guests or about the show, offtrackshow@gmail.com. And of course, it isn't social media. We have one other way to stay up to date with what's going on. We've got Sven Martin, who's running our Instagram account. Well, he's running for Bike Mag, and we're just fortunate enough to be able to jump on and support that. So you can check it out at Instagram at off_track. And Sven's one of the most unique characters out there. He has a relationship with every rider. Probably knows more what's going on behind the scenes than any of us will ever imagine. So what we're going to do, actually, with Sven, he wasn't able to join us this evening, but we had a little chat with him earlier on. I was fortunate enough to tape a recording with him, get his down low and information what happened to Val d'Isol. Some big things happening, so we're just going to play that right now. And, well, are you good with right now, or would you rather do in a little bit?
Just right now.
Okay.
A little bit later, I might have too much beer.
I don't know. It could produce.
You should just hit record right now.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of doing that. I'm just gonna do the show. I'll just do the show entry or opening here. So hey, Sven, thanks for joining us here on the Off Track Show. So Val d'Isol just wrapped up. What a race we had! We're only a couple hours after G came through and smashed the time there, going 1-1 again this season. I mean, what did you see? I mean, I think the track played out pretty interesting there. It grabbed more than a few riders today.
It was. It was a good mix of experience and knowing what a track would be. Like, literally, these riders, I think the practice ended at 11:15. So you got on the course at 6:15. So that's that would be 7 hours. We have a mathematician degree guy just across the table. He just told me that'd be 7 hours. So I'll go with him. And in that 7 hours, there was the whole junior field and the women. So a lot of riders, but mostly because it's so dry, like there's no way you can, you know, some tracks you can literally go at it and be like, okay, this is the line of practice and I'm just going to hit my lines. Val d'Isol was widely taped. Every section, there wasn't necessarily a faster line. There was just a widely taped section, and whether you went inside, inside or outside, outside, there wasn't much in it for time, really. boil down to Ryder, you know, Ryder's style, what would be quicker for him in that section. And being dry, I would say it was less predictable than in the rain. In the rain, there's always sort of one way or one line that's better to ride a track. In the dry, it's wide open. And you know, so there's guys that, like Menard, did amazing to pull it back from, you know, kind of not that fast in practice to pull it that far back to back on third in the podium. Steve Smith, like, literally rode like someone 5 years wiser and older. You know, he used to ride like Brooke in terms of the raw speed and aggression, but also riding super loose. And unfortunately, you know, for Brooke and Sam, both two guys that literally could have won it here, they rolled the dice, and it was just too dry to give that kind of run, I think. You know, if they pulled it off, maybe either of them probably would have been on the top step. But G, in the end of the day, G and Steve Smith, they had the experience to sort of ride within themselves. Both of them had commented, you know, before the runs and after the runs, that as soon as they tried to get a little bit wide open, they could feel themselves sliding, and they knew they were losing time rather than gaining from, you know, from holding it wide open. But then on the flip side of that, you know, two young guys, Loic Bruni and Troy Brosnan, they both did the opposite. You know, they let it wide open, and they both kind of gambled. Bruni made a mistake up top, and he said he had to go a bit wide open to get that time back, and, you know, he probably rode like Brooke, but rolled the dice and got lucky. And then Brosnan, you know, he was always looking good and smooth, but he never looked like one of the... He didn't really even look like top 10 guy. And he knew that after qualies, and he changed up a lot of his lines today and yesterday. And I think Loic's he's just strong, and he's got the good mix of... you know, he has the French style of riding instilled in him in terms of, you know, practice preparation, and the French always good with kind of knowing what needs to be done before you even come to a venue. So he has that carrying over. But then he's the opposite of a Frenchman. He's not a Nico. He's not a Fabian. He's not a Spagnola. He doesn't, you know, he's more like an Aussie or a Kiwi, really, to be honest. He has a bit of flair and you know, I wouldn't say personality, but, you know, he's like a new school of French rider. He's almost like a young Cedric, and on a track like this, if you're going to gamble, it can go either way for him. You know, he has the strength. Is Loic first year elite?
First year
senior, he's probably... He's probably the strongest, I'd say he's the strongest physically first year junior. So, and that's when the first year juniors start doing well. Like Brooke and Bryceland started doing well maybe the second year when they got a bit stronger. You know, Bryceland's a strong man now. He's no longer a lanky kid. I think that's how Bruni got on this podium. And Troy's still a skinny little bastard, but he's got the skills, and he rode like... he rode a lot like Lucas Shaw, who basically got on the podium for America there in third place in the juniors. Did Luca get third? Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of Luca probably takes off the Troy a lot, you know. Just that skill, that little bike sort of pump track, slalom type skill, transcending into a big dyno track and being, you know, still strong enough to hold on with the big boys.
Righto. Well, any parting thoughts here? I know you've got a long evening ahead of you in the press room, and we definitely appreciate you joining us here on the show. Anything else you want to add in particular of what you saw, or is back to the grind and have a couple soda pops while editing some photos?
There's one other thing that we do need to definitely discuss.
Yeah.
You might have caught some of it, but basically... Before the qualifying, the team managers had a meeting with the UCI, and there's this ongoing debate regarding the UCI World Cup rankings and the UCI World ranking. They installed a new rule that the plate numbers and the seating and the stuff based off the UCI World ranking. Now, for a country like, let's say, Switzerland, that is snowed in still in March, April, May, June.
Yeah.
They can't have any national rounds. Someone like Nick Beer at Fort William, you know, he missed his national champs last year to do Crankworx because it's a bigger event than a Swish. You know, for his sponsors, it's better for him to be at Crankworx. It's a non-UCI event. But, you know, so he didn't win national champs in Switzerland, which he probably would have done. His brother won it. Fort William, he's a top 20 World Cup rider. Fort William, he flattered and wasn't protected because they based themselves on UCI world ranking, which is a huge problem both in the cross country and the downhill. Now, this weekend, there was a manager meeting. There were six riders that got top 20 last weekend at Fort William. Mitch Delft's been one of them. He was outside of the top 20 world rankings. He had a bad seeding run, but prior to his runs, the managers had a meeting, were told by the UCI technical delegate and the UCI head commissaire at this event that the 20 UCI world ranking, as well as the six riders that were in the World Cup ranking,
yeah,
based on the Fort William result, would all be protected, so that if anyone crashed or flattered, those 26 riders would all go to the final. Mitch Dels had a shocker of a quali, knew, because he was told by his manager that he was protected, so why risk and, you know, keep trying, because, you know, you've crashed or flattered or whatever. He gets to the bottom of the course, and then they print out the quali results. Suddenly, he's not seeded.
Really?
Now, for two UCI officials to tell a rider and the managers before an event that those riders are going to be protected and then take that back before a final, before the finals, basically, that's unacceptable. There was going to be a protest. I'm not sure why it didn't materialize, but there's a lot of people unhappy with the practice schedule, the timing, for riders like Delves that basically got the short end of the stick. If that was a rider, if there was someone like Gwyn or Mark Beaumont or George Brannigan that all have big team managers and big trade teams,
yeah,
they would have been a huge stink up. And as far as I'm concerned, when you're told by two of the head, basically UCI people that you liaise with at the event, that that rider be protected, and then after your run to be told, no, sorry, we were mistaken, you can't. That's unacceptable. I don't know why the riders, the managers did not all unify and basically just short of saying strike. But there's got to be a clearer path of communication with the UCI and Inter. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction with all of this. And that's the only sour note of this event, really.
Oh, dang. Well, that's, that's something
I got pizza on the roof. I got pizza on the roof. We're going to cut it short right now.
Oh, fair enough. Well, Sven.
Pizza on the roof here, because that's where, like, we got natural air conditioning from through the old Dolomites here. We got snow-capped mountains. We got zero wind, so we don't have any wind.
Cool, man. Well, Sven, thanks very much for joining us on the show here. We definitely appreciate your input of what went on. And, yeah, I did not hear any of that UCI stuff,
We got Boris, a crazy German, that wants to say hello in German to the Bike Mag readers in Germany.
Sounds good.
Guten Abend. Wir haben schon 1, 2, 3 Bier getrunken. Schön, dich endlich mal kennenzulernen. Ich habe eigentlich gerade das Video, aber deswegen kann ich nur so Hallo sagen. Cheers.
There we go. International as fuck.
Well, Sven, thanks for joining us here on the Off-Track Show, and we'll catch up with you later on. Enjoy a few weeks of off-racing. I'm sure you'll be busy each and every day, as you usually are, working with all your other programs.
I think I spoke too much, and I probably got a few facts and things wrong, because I haven't checked the papers and the numbers, but I've just seen it with my eyes, so that's as good as I can do.
That's all good, man. That's what we appreciate. That's why we love having you on the show. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll catch you later.
Catch up well, little loss.
Hey, cheers, man. All right, Seb, some big information Sven dropped on us there. As far as the UCI, what they're doing, Mitch Delft's getting kind of the short end of the stick. And talking quite highly about Stevie's rise to maturity. Out of all the youngsters, he's been the first to kind of the creams rise to the top.
Yeah, well, changed or sharpened his blade, isn't he? He's ready to go. back-to-back wins, I think that was really important for him, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah.
Well, not wins, I should say podiums.
Back-to-back podiums, dropping from a number three plate down to a number two plate. And yeah, and of course, G going 1-1 yet again, and Rachel going 1-1 again. And that's a scary thing. I mean, she's on a bit of a roll. They're both on a bit of a roll, so...
There's a statistic out there that G has podiumed 30 out of 35 of the last podiums, which is ridiculous. Like, the consistency of that is, it's quite phenomenal, really. And I think he hasn't had a win for 2 years, but to be able to still be quite up there and then come back and just absolutely kill it this year. We've seen some other people maybe not necessarily as dominant as the internet would like them to have been based on their last few years' record, but... G's not giving up, is he?
No, G's been on fire. And I mean, Claire, you've raced against Rachel many times. I mean, she's kind of she had her issues in the past. Maybe, you know, maturity wasn't her strong point and injuries came into play. She seems to kind of figured out the puzzle there, and I mean, right now she's beaten both 10 seconds at Fort William, now almost 6 seconds at Val d'Isoul. I mean, those ladies have a lot of time to try and find on the course if they want to beat her.
Yeah, for sure, we do. but yeah, she seems to be just a bit of a league of her own at the moment. Like, she's definitely a step ahead of everybody. And I think when she first like started racing, she's just like, you know, a horse out of the start gate, like, you know, a bit wild and
yeah.
And got some injuries, she learned a lot, and now yeah, it seems like she's matured a lot, and it's pretty cool to see, but at the same time, yeah, it's like, come on, you know, someone catch her. But no, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Who do you think's the nearest to her to get? I mean, everyone talks about Emmeline Rigaud, like.
Well, it's the usual suspects, isn't it? The French girls.
It's the French Connection, pretty much second, third, fourth, fifth,
yeah.
And then young Casey Manon Brown. So
and Casey, she's doing awesome, which doesn't surprise me. She's a little shredder, and we have to remember too that she's pretty new to the whole like World Cup scene, and she still has a lot of potential. So, you know, she can go places for sure.
Well, it's a pretty specific program, right? If you're not used to racing the ins and outs of these races, like, there's a set formula for each weekend of how practice works, and when you're a first-timer, you know, just roll in there like it's your local track and excel at it right away, right? You know, you need to kind of feel it out and get the flow of the program. You can't just pin it out of the gate first run on after course walk and expect to do well. You need to peak for the race run later in the weekend.
Totally, yeah. But I think she's on a good program. She's got a good support network, and she's been taking it seriously since she started, you know, racing the World Cups. So like last year. So yeah, I'm sure we'll see big things from her, just with her attitude and her riding style, and you know, she still has a lot to. Like mature,
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, she is. She's definitely a youngster there, and I was talking to Sven actually before we recorded that forum conversation. He was saying that last year's female world champ there, she had her ankle taped up and could barely even walk before she left the start game.
At Val d'Isoul.
Morgan Schaar.
Yeah, Morgan Schaar had to get taped up. Couldn't really walk around the pits. Could pretty much put her, you know, the kind of heel of her foot on the pedal and. Somehow she rode Val d'Isoul on flats, kept her feet on, with a pretty blown out ankle. So
was this last weekend?
Yeah, this was on Sunday.
That's a lot to put yourself through. And then we had Andrew Needling as well. He was told like not to race. He had a big crash in the morning before the race, and his teammates just said, "Look, please, just don't race. You've been in the hospital, just don't do it." So like, I mean, where does that come in, like? When do you decide to race, and when do you decide to put it all on the line and like risk?
I think it's an individual decision. Like, if you feel like, you know yourself best, and you know, there'll be always people going like, oh, you know, maybe you shouldn't have, or you know, whatever. Maybe or you're just being a pussy or whatever. But like, it comes.
You're being
down
a sissy.
To,
get to the top of the hill.
It comes down to
you're on the clock this weekend.
Feeling. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, especially, you know, I think certain injuries, such as a head injury, I think you don't screw around with that. I mean, that's where I think a lot of times maybe somebody else's decision is a good thing if you've been concussed, but bumps and bruises, I think that's, you know, yours at the end of the day. Chris, you've raced probably many a times where you probably shouldn't be, or you know, maybe you've second-guessed it because you're beat up, but you're there to race. That's what's in your blood, you know. It's going to piss you off more to sit off on the sidelines and watch everybody come down knowing that even though I'm hurt, I could probably, you know, still kick some serious ass.
Definitely, you know, what I was thinking, it comes down to if you're in the points series overall,
yeah,
then you'll take that risk.
Yeah.
You know, you'll roll down or you'll put in a 70% effort just to get down and get those points. If you're 20th in points or whatever off the back, then that's when you're going to make this decision and go, no, I'm going to save it, recover, spend a few weeks till the next race.
Yeah.
Kind of put in some rehab.
And try to smash it.
Smash the next one. I mean, they got 5 weeks off now, so I'm sure there's a few guys bumped and bruised up and just generally fatigued. I mean, we're 2 World Cups in and it's been sunny and warm. Mm. I mean, shit, when was the last time that happened, you know? I'm sure mechanics are probably enjoying not having to power wash the crap out of every bike and spit polish the fine European mud that seems to find every crack and crevice on a bike. They've probably been enjoying that so far this year. And I mean, with the men, it's funny, when they first finished up, I grabbed the result sheet, went to the very end, and worked my way up from 80th place onwards. And just to see who had, you know, we already know who won and came across the line first, but it was interesting. You go through and, you know, right away you're looking at a lot of factory guys, Danny Hart, Nick Beer, Fabian Cusani, and then you've got George Branning and all these guys on big factory teams, Mark Beaumont, Sam Hill. They pushed it, and Sven said the track was blowing out. It was, you know, pretty much a foot deep of silt, and you couldn't really open it up. And you know, a lot of guys had something to prove. I know Sam was, it's 2008. I wish we could be playing some audio clip of Warner screaming his lungs, saying that,
look at
the time, you know? Like, I can still watch that 2008 run, and it still kind of gives me shivers, you know? Even though he didn't win, it's pretty mind-blowing what he did at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
He pushed it. All these guys, Brooke McDonald pushed it. I mean, you guys are working a lot with juniors. How do you guys push that onto the juniors where being patient and not pushing at a young age is an important thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like letting the track come to you rather than trying to make the track work for you.
That's kind of something we're doing with like our free lap timing system. We're working with some of our junior kids and kind of getting them to try like go flat out, okay, now relax, you know, like different scenarios.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're gonna just like pin it and you know, smash it. Now you're gonna, you know, take a step back.
Are the results shocking for them? Like, is it kind of a bit of an eye opener that, hey, if I push it, I'm only a second quicker, but the chances of me, you know, totally wadding it up.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll be surprised. Like,
yeah.
And we've raced Val d'Isol in the wet and in the dry, and to tell you the truth, well, to be honest, for me, I know Chris is really good at riding dry and loose, gnarly shit, but
yeah.
For me, I do way better when it's wet, and I think Val d'Isol for me is quite a bit gnarlier when it's dry and silty like that.
Wow.
It just gets so blown out, it's
yeah.
so slippery, it's so trippy because you can't, like, you don't, it's harder to find your edge, and then, like, it's, you know, there's a lot of hidden things in the silt, like,
yeah.
you know, you're like, you can't quite trust it, so
it's very inconsistent, you
exactly,
know, surface,
like,
right? You don't know where to push, where not to push, and it's cool that you say that. You're West Coast Canadian, you've grown up in the wet, you know how to race that surface, where Chris is, you know,
yeah,
born
totally.
And bred Australian, and that's the biggest thing I notice here, especially in Whistler, when the tracks get blown out in the summertime, I turn into a little Nancy out there when it's dry, you know, super
mm-hmm.
dry, and there's dust on the rocks, because I don't know how to ride that stuff. Whereas I see the Aussie kids start to, you know, really, really excel. And you know, people like yourself, Chris, I mean, you dominate on any surface, but that's really your strong point, is that, you know, flat, loose, you know, dry conditions.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, that's where I excel. That's where I love most. But, getting back to the juniors and this timing thing we got, we've just ordered some timing poles and some watches, and this is the next step we're taking to the juniors in our coaching level.
Yeah.
Nobody's really done this before in coaching, I don't think, and we're pretty excited to see the results. I mean, we're going to take these guys up here on the hill and get them to test, you know, different scenarios, like Claire was saying, like, you know, go hard for one run, relax one run, no pedaling, like chainless.
Yeah.
Just pump and absorb, no stress. Next run, maybe we'll do different tire pressures, different suspension settings. I mean, we've got all these factors to work with just to get these guys to figure out a happy medium in their run, so that when they get to a proper race,
yeah,
they know how hard to go and when to relax,
yeah,
and when and how to, like, just sort of
what works put that optimally into for them,
yeah, what works more efficient best for them, and be in their own comfort zone, you know,
exactly. So I think in between all this little testing against the clock,
yeah,
which is like a it's a mock race. This is going to get these guys more set up for World Cups and the bigger races they're going to go to.
It hasn't been done before, because I'm sure the Frenchies have been doing it for a million years. But over here in Canada, like, I've been on the national team for 11 years straight. We've never done that.
Yeah.
Like, there hasn't been a program in place that does that kind of thing. So I think...
Well, Canadian cycling is a joke. Well, the support we have is
for downhill. They're trying, but it's kind of good for, and in Australia too, like, they're way out in the boons, so they know they don't get a lot of that. And some of the Aussie riders, like, they follow us out here and they come to Whistler and they're like, we want to train with you. So it's cool to give them a chance to, you know, try to bridge that gap.
We saw some big, like, some of the juniors did some amazing results. I was just looking through, and it was like, first place was Lucas Dean. Oh, sorry, Dean Lucas.
Yeah. Double name.
Yeah. He would have got 22nd.
You got two first names, kid. I don't know what to call you.
Yeah, he's a fast kid. We were at a few races with him in Australia.
He did most of the races we were at.
Always posting fast times.
He won a few junior races.
Yeah.
And he was up there with the Pro men's time, so it's no surprise to see him up there at the World Cups.
It's scary to see what those kids are doing, and I mean, they're going fast, they're crashing, as we saw with Taylor Vernon there, the GT rider, that screaming and yelling on that video that posted up. Did you see that one, Seb?
Screams were horrible, wouldn't it?
I thought he was broken in half, and then he turns out he walked off there and seems to be A-okay, but makes you almost want to put on a back protector for something like that. I mean, yeah, the junior's killing it, obviously. And,
but do you think that's part of it, is that they're quite new to being injured and hurt? I mean, for instance, we look at Troy Brosnan, his injury last year at Leagang, which put him out for almost the whole year. That was his first big injury.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to get, he's just trying to get back into it. He podiumed this weekend with an amazing result. But with a lot of these juniors, they're not used to getting hurt. They don't have that big injury in them. And once
they
do, it's a bit of a shock.
I think it's good to get, let's talk about injuries. I think it's good to get that first injury out of the way, because it's such a huge learning curve, and I think it's good for you as an athlete, just maturing as an athlete. So, yeah, you're right. I think the first big injury is like they don't know how to, you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And it teaches you a lot just going through it. I don't know.
It was good to see Troy bounce back, and Luke Bruni, like Sven was talking about, in fourth place there. That's impressive. First year elite, and showing that he's really strong. He's ready to kind of go all out. And Aaron Gwynn, do we even want to touch on him? 20th last weekend, could have won this weekend. Ends up coming down just a hair off from his teammate Troy.
We could touch on it, because it's not like he's untouchable anymore, is it?
No, I think the Gwynn effect mental game is done. Everybody knows he's just another racer racing against the clock.
He's not a robot.
He's not a robot. The gluten-free diet and the power of the Lord Christ is apparently taking Fort William and Valdosol off. So,
Having said that, though, all the Gwynn bashers out there, I think he... He's still sixth and not far off the pace, like if you think about it. So
no, I'm a fan of him, and he could have won easily. I mean, Sven kept going on about that. All of a sudden, he looked, you know, yeah. The internet made a big deal about him going from a medium frame to a large frame, but overnight he went from okay, he's going to be top 10 to he's sitting. He could easily win this. You know, he could easily do what G did or what Stevie almost did there. He almost connected the dots. But that's racing at the end of the day. So, you know, an exciting first round, and we've got 5 weeks off till the next one. So we've got a bit of time to.
Hang on, can we touch on the Masters?
Oh yes, yes.
Good old Edward.
Winning Edward, 22nd, 26th. That's retarded.
Oh, I thought you were talking about. Masters.
No. The old no. There's the Masters category.
We're not talking about the Fat Wednesdays Master category. Yeah, Chris. Come on, we know you're not
Are
racing.
Are you racing
there, but...
Masters now?
Always.
But yeah, Edward Masters. I mean, what do we say about this guy? He's on a self-proclaimed road trip with a whole bunch of his buddies, drinking every night of the week. Getting in, you know, getting told by UCI delegates that, hey, you should go home and change your attire because it's not a good representation of the sport as a professional. Racing in a leather jacket, undone, pretty much giving, you know, the NFG attitude, no fucks given, down the entire track of Albasol, the toughest track of the year. People are mentally preparing for it all year. And he is like, whatever, I'm going to go out and get on the piss, and then I'm going to show up tomorrow and be in, you know, kick, you know,
and
do
he
very well.
26.
Yeah,
and he did the same the week before at Fort William. It's like storming results, really, for someone that.
It works for certain people.
Yeah.
I think there's certain people that need to be really structured and strict and OCD, and then there's certain people, and I think Chris is one of them, who needs to just be a bit loose and like, you know, just do their own thing and.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of did the same thing in Mont Saint Anne in 2005.
Yeah, that's right. I did my own thing for a little bit.
Did you get on the piss?
And then he won, and I was like, "What the?"
No, we might not even use this, but it wasn't the night before. It was two nights before. Because it was the first day of practice, and it was pissing down wet. I did one run, and I said, "Fuck this. I'm going back. I'm done," because I checked the weather and it was going to be fine for the Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
So there's no need to like practice.
Yeah, so there was no need to stress myself out and clean my bike down because it was muddy, or put wet tires on, or get suited up, you know, and put tear offs on.
Yeah.
So I was like, one run's good enough. The track's going to get blown out.
Save
it's going to be
energy.
It's going to be mostly sunny on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Probably dried out by the afternoon. I was like, all right. I got a plan. Come back in next day, Saturday. Practice halfway through the later on during the day.
Yep.
The late practice. I felt great. I was like, all right, this is awesome. And the funny thing was, because I always practice in a short sleeve, the common sale was like, all right, this is your last run with a short sleeve. You must qualify in a long sleeve for tomorrow. And I was like, okay, fair enough. So I did my other two runs that afternoon in a short sleeve. I was like, all right, where am I going to find a long sleeve from? So yeah, next day, it was the Sunday, and I actually borrowed a long sleeve at the moment. Just before I had to go up on the lift, from some guy that was associated with Intense.
Squid.
Just some random jersey.
Yeah, some random that was pinning us.
Hey, you can call him a squid.
He was associated with the Intense guys in Canada. I forgot the names, but borrowed his jersey, went up, did the job, and took off. And I actually slipped the pedal off the start and had to sit down for a bit and gather my composure, took off again, started a sprint, and worked out well.
Is that so? Were you qualifying the same day as racing back then, or is it?
I
Yeah, well,
maybe, that was qualifying in the morning. That was the old format.
Yeah, it was.
It must have been a different time.
Yeah.
Needless to say, though, I think Chris kind of would fit in with the Ed and Wynn Masters program.
We've got a big white van that says the Marai, which is like a sacred place. Or I believe it is.
Annoying, though, because I trained so hard. I worked so hard to get half as far as Chris. And, like, he went to the gym twice with me this offseason. Twice!
Were you laying concrete and banging? You were working manual labor, though.
Yeah,
right?
he's working and stuff, but like...
Graphic design. Graphic designer, manual labor.
Whatever. This is on the record.
So what you're saying is, do you think like mentally, like a different outlook?
It's a mental
like,
thing, I think.
Really makes the race.
Well...
What works for one person doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah,
for
because
another,
even
so.
With some
There's
of
no
our
formula, right?
Even with some of our riders that we have, like our young riders, you can see it in them. Some of them are like, they need structure and they need like, they want to know how to go to the pump track and like, what do they do at the pump track for the first 15 minutes and then the next and then the, like they want to know like structure. And then some kids are just like, woohoo! Like they just pin it around and. Mm.
McDonald's cheeseburgers and milkshakes
afterwards.
And they're
afterwards. Really fast, and you're like, okay, well, you know, everyone works different, so whatever works for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Leather jacket and on the piss.
Yeah, but you can't put that no training motion in.
It's in.
I mean, it's at the level they're at right now, we know there has to be training. A natural talent only take you so far. I mean, evidence is you look at Josh Bryson and Brandon Fairclough. Who I was expecting a lot more from him this weekend. Mm. Not a lowly kind of. I think he was.
I think everyone's been expecting something from him for years
who,
now. Bren? It's like heartbreaking, really.
Brenda.
Oh, Bren.
But you know, natural talent only take you so far, and you know we're gonna see it with the enduro side a lot this year. You know you can't just it's not a local race. You can show up and have fun and let natural talent take you so far because. There's somebody that doesn't have all the natural talent that is working their ass off day in, day out, and they're at the gym, and they're finding those tenths a second, and they're improving, so...
You know what? And that, to me, is more impressive than somebody with talent that sits on their ass. Like, somebody that's not as talented and works super hard for it, and like, has a lot of heart, I find that way more impressive than, you know, the other way around.
We'll be right back with more Off Track Podcast in just a second.
Let's get into more about you guys. You know, I think we could, you know, with you, Chris, you have World Cup wins, you're 4-time national champ, you got Norval records, Mount 7 psychosis record. I mean, you still have the largest World Cup win margin. You know, I think most people don't even know that Intense made shoes back in the day, that they're the, you know, kind of the they laid the blueprint for what 5'10 is nowadays. You were the guy that started that way back when, you know, you know, you had a tragic accident, you came back and got fifth at 2005 World Champs. I mean, so many accomplishments. And then I think the most impressive thing for all the new kids that are listening nowadays is you did a video last year at Summit and you pretty much showed everybody what the heck was up and how to ride a bike in a bike park. You rode, you know, how to ride a full-blown downhill rig and tear the bike park limb from limb. I mean, mind-blowing.
Sven, I was chatting with Sven this afternoon, and he said one question, and we'll get this out of the way. He says, when you're drifting that left-hander on Bear Cub, like, mm-hmm. what's going through your head? Is it Slipknot or Megadeth?
He's like, la, la, la,
do-do-do. Yeah, good question. It's probably both, actually, because they're both heavy metal.
Or is it just quiet?
Just smashing shit, you know? it's no fair. I mean, at that speed, you got to be so aggressive on the bike. You can't just ride la-di-da through the corner. You've got to know what you're doing. Lean the bike, smash it, off the brakes, and kind of guide the bike.
Yeah.
Not break the bike through the corner. You know what I mean? You're leaning the bike, turning the front wheel, dodging rocks. I mean that's part of the thrill, right?
It's like the warrior spirit, yeah. Really. Like once you're in there, you're fucking like full.
There's no turning back.
Yeah. I think for Chris too, like becoming a coach has been a big learning experience for him because he just does stuff. He just does it. So to break it down for him is like, wow, oh yeah, that's what I do.
It's definitely the head scratcher. It's like when girlfriend's like, oh, or a friend's like, oh, how do you do that? Like, how do you jump that line?
Well, that's what he used to say to me. You just do it. Oh, I don't know.
And then you like, you start thinking, you're like, I guess I like maybe break a little bit. And then I like pull up and then like get some like good pop to it. But you don't, you have no clue, right? Like I watch you hit that corner. I've stood at that corner and watched you come through there. And I'm like, I'm like dumbfounded. I'm like, I don't have a clue how you do this that fast. You know, I go through there and I'm like, yeah, I'm moving real quick, and then I'm probably moving, you know, moving
and then you
like
see
a
yourself
snail.
On video and you're like, who the hell's that?
Who's that tripod
are you
squid?
Are you finding like you're able to dissect all that stuff that you should do very instinctually, like now you've gone into the coaching programs here?
Yeah, good question. I do. Ever since I started coaching, I've grown to realize I've been able to break down and explain how I ride, which has been like, it's amazing.
It's like a nature to him.
Yeah, I mean, for coaching, it's unreal. I mean, before, you know, you ride, it's natural. It's second nature. You got the talent, you got the skill, you just do it. But when somebody asks you, how do you do that? You're like, I don't know, I just do it.
I
coach, I've gone through some courses, and yeah, it's provided me with the knowledge to break it down, which is, it's helped me a lot even with my riding now. So, yeah, it's...
Back in the day, did you have like guidance and coaches and counselors, anyone like that? I mean, nothing at all?
Nothing, man. I mean, it was just point yourself down the hill and figure it out. That's all it is.
What about Shackles though? Like, wasn't he a big part of like trying to form that like the Aussie invasion, which happened?
He was. He did well too. It was really great to have him along. He did help a lot of juniors back in the day. I think it was like 2005 up to maybe 2008. He helped the juniors, but even for us pros, he'd walk down the track and he'd have footage.
Yeah.
Invite us back to his room with all the juniors, watch the footage, and just even mingle amongst ourselves just to pick lines and see what's best. And
this is before GoPros.
Yeah.
So.
I mean,
he probably had
he did a lot.
Massive
boom box camcorders
from the corner store.
Yeah. No, it was good. Sharples is good. But ever since Sharples left, it's been pretty vague. Until recent years, we've had Chris Clark and a few others, but
Jared Rando, I think, is doing some work.
Rennie back at the races.
Yeah, Rennie was kind of taking Rando's place because Rando's having a kid, and well, he probably already has had a kid. I'm not sure, but
it's an interesting switch of Australian coaches there from Rando to Rennie.
It's good though because Rennie's got a good personality. He's really approachable, and he's like he does know his shit. As much as you think he's a dumbass, like he does like know his shit. He's pretty switched on. So when
he seems
to
pretty
be...
dialed. He's doing the coaching and stuff more so too, right? Back at home, you know.
Yeah,
now that we don't see him at every World Cup, he's still got a lot on his plate. He's still heavily involved with those.
And
guys,
he's so pregnant too now, so he's soon gonna have a little nugget running around.
A small Rennie, a large Rennie.
Yeah.
How was that back in the day? Like when you guys used to, I mean, did you used to get on pretty well with Rennie and the rest of the crew? There was a whole bunch of you like troublemakers that just kind of made a big waves on the world race circuit as such back then. Like, how was that? Like,
it was pretty cool because I think the one number one reason was we were on flat pedals. Me and Nathan.
Yeah.
There was Sam Hill.
Well, that was a Mad Cats Intense team back in the day.
No, Mad Cats Iron Horse.
Mad Cats Iron Horse. No.
And there was Bryn, and I'm not sure who else, but we were all on flat pedals. And Nathan was a junior. He was a junior and a senior on that Mad Cats program.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. But we were just smashing it in the Norbers, getting to the World Cups and still smashing it. And yeah, I think we had an advantage then, because it's weird, like, you know, the track locations change every year, right?
Yeah.
And for some years they were in certain areas, and some years they were in other areas. But some areas were like a lot steeper, tracks more suited to us riding flat pedals. So I think, yeah, guys like me and Nathan and whoever else, Wild Boys, just, you know,
prevailed.
Succeeded.
Well, yeah,
it was great.
You guys were cutting loose. I mean, like I touched on, I mean, Intense made shoes back in the day.
Mm.
Nobody really even knows that.
Right.
I mean, 510 kind of pulled it out, and you were the first person to buy on that program. I know everybody's, you know, thinks that Sam Hill's was probably the inventor of, you know, foot out, flat out, flat pedals, but you were that guy back in the, you were that guy. You, I mean,
yeah, you and Jeff Stevo used to be very tight and experiment with stuff, eh?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a long story, and there's been many interviews and discussions, but originally, this is how I see it, is basically Jeff Stever, one of the owners from Intense, went to 510. He had this brilliant idea. Okay, let's get this rock climbing rubber, because Jeff was into rock climbing, I think, and some of his friends. And he thought, let's get this sole and put it on a just a basic like free ride shoe, like DC or a skate shoe. You know, you got this sole, put on it, gave it to me, rode it. I was like, this is amazing. I was like, I can't get my foot undone, you know? Like, this is weird. Like, I hate it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure, Jeff, you know? It's a bit weird, but yeah, a few weeks down the track, I loved it. It was like a breakthrough, total advantage. And it was like, at that time, it was a secret. It was like nobody else had anything close to it for flat pedals. I was riding Vans before that Waffle Sole.
Yeah.
And it was, no offense to any other shoe company, but it was like, you know, plastic. Like a ice cream container strapped to your shoe. Sole of your shoe. Compared to this 510 rubber. So, since that day on, Jeff had his Intense shoes made. With his own design, the outer sole, the stealth, like Puma Cat, whatever you call it, on the bottom of the sole.
Yeah.
And that was it for about 5 years. And Intense made their shoes for however long. And then
I heard those shoes were like really treasured as well. Like, you know,
pretty much,
they were not that easy to come by. So people would like take secondhand shoes off other people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember giving away secondhand shoes left, right, and center in America, back at home in Australia, all the time. Guys were like just frothing at the mouth, going, "Can I have your shoes?
Let's have your stinky boots."
Yeah. Like, I'll give you $50 for those shoes you're gonna throw away. I'm like, hell yeah. But more than likely, I didn't take the money. I gave it to friends and family and cousins and whatnot. But but then it went kind of dead. Went kind of stale, the 510 thing and the Intense thing. And I think the deal was Intense couldn't afford to keep on producing and making those shoes from 510 and whatnot. So it was a dead area. Later on, 510 came out with the Impact, the black plane shoe.
Yeah.
Same sole as what Jeff and 510 discussed. And yeah. Then the rest is history.
Took off running with it.
It's crazy to see a comfortable story. I mean, now you've had a pro model shoe for years, and you know the Carver, and it's it's interesting to see a lot of kids went from clips to flats for so many years, and now all of a sudden everybody's kind of easing back into the clipless program. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's kind of the tug of war on the World Cup circuit. I mean, the hashtag right now is, you know, flat pedals for medals. There's still a few faithfuls out there. There's Sam Hill and Brooke McDonald, those guys still trying to.
We even saw Brendan Fairclough. He's been riding clips as well.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Nice. Well, I can touch on that subject, definitely, because seriously, clips are more efficient.
Yeah.
On the right sort of track.
Yeah.
And I think on the World Cup these days, and most tracks, you know, it is more efficient. If it's a steep ass track like Champry, for example,
yeah,
I'd tend to go definitely more towards flats. It's gravity fed.
Yeah.
Tracks that aren't as steep, more mellow, and quite bermed, where you don't have to lean the bike more than your body.
Yeah.
And get your foot out and drift. Yeah, sure, clips. If you can be more efficient, why not? I mean, I definitely encourage the guys that I coach and I come across to go to clips, because it's going to give them more strength, more power, and it's going to be more efficient. You know, you get that pull-up sensor, you know, that motion.
Yeah.
Pull up. And
well, probably keeps them in control a little bit too at the same time, right?
You're right. That's what I'm getting at.
Charge into it.
Exactly.
Have you tried it?
Mate, I use clips. I've used clips for years, since day one.
Yeah.
For cross country.
Yeah.
Training. It's more efficient, no doubt. And I've used clips a couple of times in my career. First was 2005, I think. One of those years. It was in New Mexico.
Angel Fire.
Yeah. Might have been 2003. You might correct me if I'm wrong, but I was like, all right. I had to make this decision. I was like, all right, this track's, it's fast, it's flat out, it's pedaling, it's cross ski runs. And it's not that steep, but it's kind of mellow. And all the corners are bermed. So there's no need to get a foot out.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, let's try clips. So on the Saturday, I tried clips and it worked out well. I was like, all right, I'm producing more speed and it's more efficient and I can relax a bit more. So yeah, for race day, used clips and ended up fourth that day. So I beat a lot of guys that were like pretty known to run clips. So I was pretty happy with that.
So it's about choosing like horses for courses, really.
Mm.
Like picking the right thing, right time, eh?
Pretty much. I mean, it's like, you're going to know your game, know your riding style.
Yeah.
You got to be, I guess, in touch with yourself and bike and
being
set up.
Being familiar with it, right? Yeah. Like being comfortable on both, you know, both setups. Definitely,
yeah,
must play a huge role, where if you're second guessing yourself or worried about it a bit, then you're in trouble before you even get out of the start gate. But if you're comfortable in both of them, you're A-okay, so.
Definitely, I think, yeah, on that note, being versatile is a key thing to being a good all-around rider,
yeah,
not just a straight-ace rider, I mean, you know, on
well,
one thing.
Those days have changed. I mean, it used to be like that on the World Cup, right? There would be the rider that would, you know, would excel on one course one weekend and then would be horrific, you know, out the ass the next weekend. And now you can't be that guy anymore, you know? You have to excel on every each and every course.
Adapt,
so
yeah.
Exactly.
Adapt to it. So, and then, I mean, I guess, you know, Claire, I mean, with you, you're no stranger. Like, we talked about, you're 11-time Canadian national team member, world champs bronze medalist, Canadian national champion, top 10 World Cup racer. You do it all. And like I said at the start of the show, you're still showing these youngsters kind of how it's done. They might be getting younger and faster, but you still seem to have the answer for them when you're leaving the start hut each and every weekend.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying, and I still love it, and I know I'm. You know, I think. You know. I think I'm 35 and. you know, these young guns are, they're all fresh and new, and maybe they haven't had their big injuries yet or whatever. Bottom line is I love it, and I love the challenge, and I'm so proud of them all. Like, they're like my little nuggets. And I don't know, like Michaela, Casey, Holly, you know, all of them, Miranda, they're like my little buddies, and it's so cool to see that. It'll be so cool to see them do well. And I always try to challenge them, though.
I mean, you're back racing this year. Are you gonna line up?
I think, like, I mean, right now I'm just back on the bike and I'm feeling pretty good. Like, all the coordination's still there. I just gotta get strong. But I think Chris and I, you know, we're talking about maybe doing the last two World Cup rounds, just because we still have it in us to be there. And I think Chris still wants to prove something. And
there's unsettled scores for sure.
Yeah, right. I think so. And I don't know. It's like, I mean, it's hard to stop. It's hard. It's like, it's one of the hardest things, I think, is to stop competing. Even after this big accident, you'd think that this would be the excuse that I'd have to just mellow out. And it just, yeah, crossed my mind, but
yeah,
that soon just disappeared into thin air. And, all, you know, I think you just want to keep kind of challenging yourself. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to compete with, you know, these girls, you know, but I don't care. I mean, obviously I care, but that's not totally the point to me anymore. So,
well, once a racer, always a racer,
yeah,
right?
So.
Like, it's, you still, I mean, we're fortunate we have the Fat Wednesdays every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And it's like, as much as it's a beer league race, you're still like,
going against the clock.
You're still racing against the clock. You're still like, I don't want to get...
You're still trying to go as fast as you can.
I don't want to get smoked by such and such. Like, you know, you have something to prove on every level. And, I mean, it's cool to see that you still... The fire still burns deep within both of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys still are like, no, we want to, you know, we want to race, and we want to race on a World Cup level, you know? We're not ready to just... You know, hang it up
No.
What are the two last rounds this year that you're hoping to get to?
Half Gel, Norway, and
Leo Gang.
Leo Gang.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a thought. Like, we don't know if it's gonna happen. Like,
yeah.
We're not there right now because,
yeah,
well, obviously the car accident.
Yeah.
And funding.
Yeah.
It's the only reason.
Is there, I know you guys have done, you've done fundraisers in the past. Is that something you guys are kind of thinking about a little bit later on, depending on if you get to that point, you know? Like, I mean, you live in probably the best community for that, you know? You know Whistler would band together for you, so.
I don't know. I mean, I think, I was thinking of putting on a fundraiser for, like, some of the riders that, yeah, are kind of paying their own way on,
yeah,
the national team, like whoever makes the Canadian national team, but,
yeah,
but never really thought about us doing one for ourselves. I don't know.
Fair enough.
I mean, I just don't think that we should be putting on a fundraiser to get ourselves to the World Cups. I,
yeah,
you know, we should be there. It's just not available,
yeah,
at the moment. And it kind of sucks.
There seems to be like quite a division as well between the rich and the poor in the World Cup circuit. Like, you have your factory teams, and then you have, there's a huge amount of privateers that...
Yeah, and that just, you know what? That just goes to show, like, the passion in sport and competition, because there's only a handful that are like fully hooked up, taken care of, and the rest of us are just like privateers, and we're just like doing it for the love and, you know, our whatever goals and dreams. So it's pretty unique sport that way. Everyone like acts like they're pro or looks like they're pro, but really they're not.
They're down at the river,
like,
washing their gear.
Me and Katrina Strand, like, a few years ago, like, well, someone was like, are you guys pro? And we're like, I was like, oh, it says pro on my race license, but, like, you know, we don't make money doing it.
Yeah.
Pouring away to me.
you guys have both raced so long, and I'm hoping I don't get an unbiased answer out of you, but you guys have raced so many different bikes over the years. You guys have seen technology come so far. Is there a particular season, or, and I guess I'm looking for, is there a particular bike that you look back on and you're like, that thing was awesome? Like that, you know?
No.
No?
I've raced 3 bikes, dude. I mean, I've been on Intense since 2000.
Yeah.
Right? So what's that, about 15 years?
Is there a particular year, though, that you were like, you know, you got along with? Because you've raced it, what, from M1 to M3 to M9?
M6, M9.
M6, M9.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the point. Before that, I was on a World Force. That was my first suspension bike.
Yeah.
It was
a chrome Molly heavy thing.
Yeah.
High bottom bracket, steep hand angle. I didn't know any better. And I won on that. On the national circuit.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the best thing. Because before that, I had no suspension, really. After that, GT Australia picked me up. So I was on a GT Lobo.
Yeah.
And then 99 was GT, the crank team in 99 with Dave Rogers. So I was GT. So that's my second bike.
That was when you first came to America, too.
Yeah, it was 99. And that's when... We had some results, me and Nathan. We rocked the Norbert circuit, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then after that, yeah, third bike was the Intense.
Yeah.
And it was unreal. I mean, just having all that support was like no other. It was like family, and it still is to this day. But I can tell you the truth, that M9 to this day is the best bike I've ridden. I've ridden a few, across the years.
Yeah.
Just short downhills in the car park, whatnot, but nothing, over a period of days testing. But yeah, M9's doing well to this day.
Could you ever imagine yourself not riding an Intense?
Not at this point.
Because you seem pretty loyal. It's like really tied in.
Well,
with...
I mean, you're right. I'm not making millions. And the Intense is kind of company that is, they're kind of helping me out as well. They're not giving me millions ever, either. But, I'm being loyal to them because they've been like family. They've helped me out in other ways in the past that other bike companies probably couldn't have or shouldn't have. So,
they're good deals for sure.
They're like family and really appreciate those guys. So, unless something
and
else.
The bike is rad, like it is, it's awesome.
Yes.
I've ridden a few different bikes too, and the M9 was definitely like a step up.
What's your bike history, Claire? I mean, I know you're on Specialized for a while, and then were you on Belfa?
Yeah,
point?
I was on a B1 for a year, I think, and then before that, I was on Belfa. That was when I was like a squid and I was just starting out. But yeah, they were like the first company that said, hey, Claire, we've noticed you. Here's a frame. It was pretty cool. Like such a cool group of guys. Like anyways, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget anyone that's ever helped me out along my journey. But yeah, the M9 is definitely like I'm in love with the bike. I think one thing for me, though, especially is weight. I would love to get my hands on a carbon bike like if pretty much everyone else has now. Because I think if you think about the evolution of bikes, like sure, when Chris first started, it was little to no suspension on racing down fire roads. Then it was big bikes with tons of suspension racing down burly tracks. And now it's burly tracks and everyone's searching for seconds because it's become a lot more competitive. And now everyone's searching for seconds, and weight counts. It matters. So I think I would love Jeff to make, if you're listening, a carbon M9, please.
Well, on that subject, the weight ratio for a lighter person on a heavier bike, it doesn't really work. You need something more similar, like a light.
Like Chris and
bike.
I are on the same weight bike.
Yeah. Well, you need
obviously
the same. You need to have the bike that matches the power to weight
ratio,
right? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
And then could
one
you
of the strongest riders on the circuit.
Exactly. And then could you imagine like him being put on a really light bike?
Yeah.
Like how much?
Yes, please. Well, I'm not saying it's terribly heavy.
No.
Something tiny lighter.
Well, I mean,
but it's on.
I'd actually be quite terrified to see what Chris would do with a light bike. After he foot planted the cow wall ride on freight train last year,
he probably could have flared it accidentally.
It's not necessarily just like the intense frame. It's how we've got them all built, like all our components combined and stuff like that.
Well, and I think the weight with bikes is just it's a number. But I think Claire, you really hit it. Having a bike that matches your weight and your body type, you know, with being, you know, if you're a bigger, taller person, you can get away with a lot more on bikes. And, you know, I think we're seeing that in the sport now. Guys are getting a lot more kind of into finding the bike that matches them perfectly for what their weight is, what their height is, and everything. So
We talked about this like pre-show as well, didn't we, Chris? So we're talking about like different body types, like really tall
point,
people with long limbs versus shorter, stockier guys that we saw, and like you had some comments on Bao de Sol and what that might have meant with some of the results.
Yeah, definitely a good point. Obviously, if you go to one end of the scale, like a shorter guy, you know, he's not going to have like all that suspension in his arms and legs, right? He's going to be struggling a little bit more in those holes and drops and rocks and corners. He's going to be probably riding a bit more aggressively and a bit more loose, a bit more wild. Whereas yet the taller guys, like Steve Pate, Greg Minnaar, he looked smooth that day. G
on that new bike I've said
I mean,
it last week. I think he's built that bike specific for what his body size is, and he's getting along with it really, really well.
Yeah, good point. I mean,
it looks good that way.
I'm not just saying it's the rider. It's a combination of the bike rider, but you could see the shorter riders having a bit more difficulty, and the guys that were taller, it seemed like they were one with their bike. Bike was tuned. They were more relaxed. They had more leverage in their legs and arms and just seemed to flow a bit more.
Seems
on that,
like
on
shorter,
that sort of track.
The shorter riders are just like little freight trains. They just go for it.
Well, they got to try harder.
They got to have balls something.
Well, Troy was riding balls out. He was trying, and he's a little guy, and you looked how he looked super tense. Like, he looked really, really tense, where a lot of other guys kind of flowing down the trail quite a bit more than them, so.
It's funny, I've also thought about some of the free riders, you know, like switching a little bit. Some of the free riders like that, Andrea Lacongo, like he's tiny but stocky, and the way he crashes is unreal because he just tumbles and all his limbs are close to his body. And he tumbles and he just rolls and gets up.
Just tucks in.
You know, but then you see someone like Kelly McGarry, who's, you know, 7'6".
Yeah.
And it's just like fucking octopus hanging out of the sky. Like,
is
it like the opposite way around for downhill then? Like, you know,
I think there's strengths and weaknesses to each, like, a tall, lanky person and a short, stocky person will obviously have more power when it comes down to it. And I think right in between is where you want to be. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't go to say that, you know, like, look at Emmeline. She's a little powerhouse. And
yeah.
She's just got balls, I swear. Like, she just goes for it.
She's strong.
She's always up there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, very, very much so. Very much so.
The bike and body is not really a barrier to success, is
no.
it? But
no.
There can be things to work towards.
Yeah.
Stretch your limbs out.
Yeah.
Stretch
it's
your
a
limbs
combination,
out. Though,
I mean, it's a combination. Seriously,
yeah.
Seriously. That's why some of these guys switched bike companies. They get to a certain bike company, they're like, okay, this is working. This is what I've been searching for, you know? And it works for them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this is why the Athens, this new GT, it's freaking working. That new bike, I think it's a bit longer.
Yeah.
And the suspension is more it just works.
It's nice and balanced.
I've seen the design, and it's like probably 10 designs in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's so similar.
Yeah.
It friggin' works.
But it's a big step from what they had, I think.
Yeah, and it's a better step.
For years,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's a huge much. Change. It's definitely a huge change. And but you watch him and he rides, and him and Rachel both look very comfortable on the bike.
Yeah,
they don't look
so comfortable.
They're strong riders, but they don't look like they're forcing the bike to do what they don't want it to do.
Yeah.
Do you ever remember like G when he was riding on Giant before they joined Kamisawa? He was like always
when he was like
very...
140-pound little.
Yeah, but he was
always
the very much off the back of the bike.
Yeah,
you know, like every video he saw, he'd be off
like
the bike very low. Like he was trying to almost compensate.
He's like that on Kamisawa too.
For the size of the bike.
Probably,
Whereas now you see him, like he looks a lot more like neutral and solid.
Yeah, dude. So good point. He's just one with the bike. If you're with that,
yeah.
You got to party. You got to win.
They're definitely looking. They're looking unbeatable going into the next round. The next round's not for another 5 weeks. Until then, though, I mean, our next round, we've got an Enduro coming up again, Seb. We've got the next Enduro World Series, which is in France, Val d'Oise. I'm sure I probably didn't pronounce that correct, but...
whatever.
It's French.
It's French.
This is the birthplace of Enduro, isn't it? So it'd be interesting to see it go back to this is where Fred Glow started it in 2000 and...
Yeah, I know they were posting, the Enduro World Series was putting stuff on Instagram the other day, kind of a flashback in time with those, but different from the first Enduro World Series we saw, which was Punta Ala. We're going back to France and chairlift-driven enduro riding, where the stages are all kind of through each chairlift. I'm guessing we're going to probably see the same sort of results we saw the first one, the same riders up front, so...
Well, we've seen some local riders or some local-ish riders like coming by practicing their wares. We had Curtis Keane coming by on his 29er doing a lot of bike park laps.
That's true. We had Josh Carlson. We had
but Josh Carlson was on his downhill bike, so
yeah.
Is he just getting up to speed?
It's it was very very interesting to see what was been going on there the past little bit. That it should be a good round. That's not happening until later on this month. That's June 29th and 30th that weekend, and then we'll be right away the weekend after that. We'll have Crankworx Enduro World Series in France, Les d'Elpe, and then we'll be heading a bit of a time off. We'll be heading back stateside to the Colorado Freeride Festival. So, about a week off here, and then we'll be going to. Hitting up France, so I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see the same guys back up in contention there for that that next one. Seb, do you see any surprises coming up? Or that's probably what we're going to see Fabian back up there. We're going to see, Jerome. We're going to see Ben Cruz. I know he's been probably training pretty hard, so.
Yeah, I think we're going to see the same old people.
Yeah.
On an already, start, but yeah, I think I'm sure we're going to see the same contenders get right out there.
Perfect.
I don't know. Is it just me? After seeing 2 weeks of downhill, I'm just less than excited for enduro. Maybe when it comes around after an enduro race, I'll be more excited. But
I guess I kind of
having 2 weeks of downhill.
2 weeks of downhill, getting the kind of juices flowing. I know that we're in full bike park mode here in Whistler at the moment. Mind you, we're going to go race...
Are we going to talk about Fat Wednesday last week?
Well, I mean, I guess we can talk about it. I mean, we do have our winner sitting with us in studio here.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, him...
Chris took the win.
He's actually in the fridge right now.
I want to know, like, how was the day after the Fat Wednesday win last week, Chris?
What?
How was the day after the win last week of Fat Wednesday? Because you won how much? Like $450 for the chainless beeline race?
Isn't it like a race within a race? Or did they actually...
It's the only race. Anyone that wore a chain is a fucking pussy.
Well, and that certain kid who's born and raised in Whistler continues to race with a chain. And
Tyler Allison. Let's call it.
Needs to have it beaten out of him.
I was surprised to see Tyler turn up with a chain. But anyway, you won like, what, $400 or something to drink that night? Did you drink it all?
Hey, that's a good way to put it. But
well, not all himself. He was definitely, I know, at one point. I remember seeing lots of sharing going on.
Yeah, I
That's the deal.
I was lucky enough to win just by half a second over Adam Billinghurst, beeline champ from Whistler for many years.
I can hear
he's cringing at home right now.
Yeah.
He's my 1 million vertical feet. Oh, I got beat though.
Yeah, so the past 2 years I've beaten him. And he sheds a bit of a tear, but I pull out the Kleenex and I'm like, Adam, here you go, mate. I wipe it from his sorry eyes. But it was good. It's always a fun race, that first race of the year, Chainless Beeline. It goes down to the bottom of the lift there.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a long race. It's 5.5 minutes for us guys. Prize money, $430, but then I won the overall, I think, that day.
Second overall.
So it was only, like $500.
So let's get this right. Only one person that entire night out of 300 races managed to beat you, and that one person had a chain.
No. That was just an elite. Jack Isles would have been second overall.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. But he had a chain.
But he had
a
chain, yeah.
Okay, so, but those people had a chain. Like, how do you go so fast
without a chain? Good question.
I saw some things in a video today. I saw there's the Beeline video went up, and there's a few sneaky Chris lines that I was like, oh, okay, that's how it's done. That's how it's done. I was like, shit.
But what is it? Is it tucking? Is it having weight? Is it just being fearless, no breaks? Like,
it's all the above. Exactly what you're saying. It's there's no cheat lines. There's being creative, and there's, you've really got to focus on your braking and being creative and let the brakes go early, getting your foot out maybe, and tucking.
Yeah,
tucking is a big one, because on that track there's a few straight sections where if you're not tucking, you know, over, you know, 10, 15, 20 second period, you're losing probably a second or two.
Yeah.
So by tucking, you know, that's making up time. It's free time.
Yeah.
So you got to tuck. Get as small as you can. But it's also having the balls not to brake as early as other people would. Instead of braking, get your foot out and just slam the corner. You know, straight line sections. There's a bit of a routine, but...
You make it sound so easy to people like myself and Seb who are pack filler.
Honestly, like, there's so many corners I roll into, and like, I'm not going that fast in. And I try and hold my weight, like, brakes off around the corner, and I can just feel my body crumple into the bottom bracket. I don't think I have the strength to be able to, like, no brake around
the stuff.
Like.
Yeah.
Exactly, but yeah, having the right bike setup. But I mean, it's all fun and games in this race. It's just consistency. I mean, not crashing.
Yeah.
Not sliding out. Not letting the wheels break loose too many times. It's a number of factors.
Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for 20 years, pretty much. And I'm not going to crash. I'm going to win. That's all there is to it. I want to win. This is my career. I'm not born. I don't go out to race just for fun.
Yeah.
I want to win everything. I want to do as
even
well.
Even if it's a Fat Wednesday.
Even if it's a Fat Wednesday. Or
you can prove yourself tomorrow night, because we're racing again.
$500?
Yeah.
What?
Really? There's a race tomorrow night?
Yeah, the next, I think we got 3 weeks straight, but tomorrow night is...
$500 for a Fat Wednesday. That's pretty awesome.
That's more than what you win.
That's the most amount of money you've ever won from a Canadian Cup.
Never that much. Oh, at the... I won the national champs in 2000. That's the last time I raced the national champs, was 2011.
Where was that at, that one?
Panorama. I won there, and I think I got a multi-tool.
Wow.
I got to stand on the podium, and I got a multi-tool.
And then you get to wear that jersey. Not just a sleeve, you get to wear that jersey each and every time
you
race for Manana.
You couldn't have a sleeve yet then or something. I don't know.
It was no Buckland National Champs party.
That was the best party ever. Were you there? Weren't you, Tristan?
Yes.
That was the best track too.
That was
Upland, Quebec.
If you guys ever get a chance to go there, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Probably
no cell reception, no internet,
right now,
but
we made a party.
Good track.
Probably made
the best party.
The craziest party ever.
In Quebec. That must be saying something.
We were it was definitely, it set the tone for the World Cup the next weekend in Mount St. Anne, that's for sure. So but yeah, well let's wrap things up here. Seb, do you have any parting notes you want to ask for these guys, or
No, really. I'm sure we should let people who's listening to this move on to whatever they're doing.
What do you mean? People don't listen to this.
That's true.
No, but definitely want to thank all the listeners for taking their time to listen to this. And obviously, Chris and Claire, thank you very much for joining us in studio today. We appreciate you guys taking the time and giving us some insight and giving us our listeners some cool stories of, like we said, you guys have been doing this for so long. You guys have so many cool things to talk about. And I know we probably didn't even scratch the surface of what we can do. I know we'll have to have you guys back again in studio later on this season.
Please do.
Especially if you guys are, if the last two World Cup rounds happen, it'd be awesome to get you guys in kind of later on this summer and see how the progress is going and as we get work our way towards that. So
next time when you come in, can you bring some of the juniors in as well?
Sure, Jeff.
We'll have to, yeah.
They're so funny. Jack, I did this line and then, hey, Jack. Hey, Finn.
Are you looking after Jack and
so
Finn,
funny,
are you?
Yeah.
Really? You got to tag those two.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to.
You should.
We'll bring those kids. I rode with Finn the other day. It was pretty interesting. I roll up where we were supposed to meet, and he doesn't even lift his head. He just has his iPhone in his hands,
yeah,
and he's playing
focused.
some game, just like full focus. I was like, "What's up, dude?" And you know, just like,
yeah.
And just like head down. Okay, well. Let's Geddes is here. Let's go for our ride. Puts it in his pocket, then loses it. Loses his phone. Blows out of his pocket. He's like, "My mom's gonna kill me!" Running up the hill, scurrying around, trying to find it. So,
no, his Snapchat friends are gonna kill him.
Yeah, need to do an update. But yeah, definitely, guys. We appreciate you coming in and joining
thanks
us here in the Off Track Studio. And thanks for all the listeners at home again. We'll be off for a little bit here, and you can stay up to date on our Twitter account, which is Off_MTV. And yeah, for myself and Seb, thank you very much for tuning in tonight, and we'll catch up with you guys in a couple weeks.